Chapter 11. Her fingers are so thin and white, shocking against the darkness of his cloak. Cullen gathers her close to him, terrified, because they've just gotten on their feet. They've just had their first victory. They cannot lose her now. He cannot lose her. When he has just started to believe that they could turn this hobbled group into a titan of force. They have argued so long over leadership, looking for the hero of Ferelden and the champion of Kirkwall and anyone else who might rally the people to their names. He finds it ironic that they realize that their true leader was here all along. "She's too cold," Cullen says, trying to shield her from the wind with his body. "She's too damn cold." Her mouth is pale, and he can barely even see her marks on her skin, she's so pale. He lifts her out of the snow and turns around to trudge back towards camp. They are all knee-deep in snow, and it was slow going to even find her. Maker, he doesn't know if they will make it back in time. He hopes they will. They must. Cassandra flanks him, helping him to break the wind with the shield on her back. She will make it. She must. But for now, we must hurry, Commander. I know, Cullen says, and he wishes that he could give her more of his warmth. But he is still wearing his breastplate, and the hours spent looking for her have already sucked away any heat he had of his outer layers. Maker, I don't even know how she survived. Maybe she is the Herald of Andraste after all. Or damned lucky. We can ask her later. Cassandra says, yelling out orders for their men to clear as much of a way for them as possible. She should be dead, for all intents and purposes. They saw the dragon. They saw that thing. They even saw her get buried by snow. She isn't. Make her, Cullen breathes, and his face tingles with cold. She is too young for this. Too young to save the world. But wasn't the hero of Ferelden this young? Wasn't Hawk? Maker. The heroes are always young for some reason. Cullen's stomach lurches and he hopes. Maker, he hopes that she does not meet the same fates they did. Llewellyn is light and small in his arms, and the fires of camp look so far away. But she makes it. They make it. It is too early for her story to end. The first time Bull sees her, she's picking her way over wet, red blood and water and loudly crashing waves, stones and bleached driftwood. She is and isn't what he expected. Yeah, he already knew she was a Dalish elf and a mage from the reports he got from the Ben Hasrath. But the reports kind of never fill in the other pieces. For one thing, she's new to the whole wearing boots thing. That makes him want to laugh. She's like Dalish then, used to less wet climes, some sort of area where she could go around barefoot. A place she knew well enough that she wasn't afraid to step on something wrong. Northern Ferelden, he's going to guess. It's cold there, but not that wet. Pretty good forest ground. He's pretty sure that there are some Dalish clans wandering around up there, too. They've got her in some sort of fancy-looking armor. She's not used to that, either. He can tell by the way she moves. It's too heavy for her. At the moment. She'll grow into it, he's guessing. It's larger than she's used to. Lots of metal. Looks mostly ornamental, but from the blood splatters on it, he's guessing that it's good at taking some damage. The staff is hers. She's familiar in the way she holds it. Made for her, he's guessing, judging from what wear he can see from here and the way she holds it. She might have made it herself. Looks nothing like the thing Dalish claims is a bow, but everybody knows isn't. It's got that same quality. Real in a way weapons made from the same pattern aren't. She speaks carefully, uncertain and trying to sound brave and strong and steady. Admirable. Bull likes her. She's got guts. She's trying to be as diplomatic as possible, but she can't hide her wariness. Her suspicion. It's not even the whole he's bigger than her with horns and a giant fucking sword thing. That's a different sort of wariness. She looks at him, and her eyes focus on his eye, his missing fingers, and his scars, and that makes her cautious. Then he opens his mouth, and then she really gets on edge. He isn't like any Kunari she's ever met, if she's met any at all. Probably sets her off. Good instincts. But she welcomes him anyway, and offers him a hesitant and nervous smile. He can almost taste her relief at all the important business being over. Bull decides to cut her some slack and turn his back on her first. "You're way too excited, Chief. You hate snow," Krem says as they're packing up. Bull ignores the grumbles of the other chargers as they attempt to close the casks. They shouldn't have fucking used the axes. That just goes to show them. "It's a gut feeling, Krem," Bull replies, reaching down to heave a casket over his shoulder. "I think I signed us up for some shit, but it's gonna be awesome." Sometimes Lavellan dreams. She dreams she is there, with them. Her hands are covered in blood that isn't hers. She almost wishes it was. She almost wishes she were a blood mage. Could she save them then? The blood is rushing through her fingers, and she wishes she could just shove it back into the body it came from. She can hear Hala screaming, and it scares her. It scares her like nothing else. She looks around for the Keeper, for the Haren, for the babies. There is a wild blur of color. Fire in the darkness, and the darkened skeleton of trees, and the crack and shudder of Aravels falling into themselves. She sees silhouettes of people she knew as they fall and scream and run. They don't fight because there is no point. They do not fight because there is nothing to fight with. It is all burning. She can smell it. Burning hair and fur and wood and meat. Lavellan can't move. She is covered in bodies. It is not a grave. It is a pyre. They are not all dead. She can't breathe. She reaches up, and the anchor on her hand dims into nothingness, and she cannot see the light. "Halani! Halani!" she screams in her head, because when she opens her mouth, it fills with rotting flesh and fire and dirt. She cannot breathe. A hand closes around hers and pulls her up. She wants to cry with relief. The hand is Corypheus's, and he digs his fingers into the anchor. She screams, mouth tasting like ash, as she watches. She can't pull herself from his grasp. It feels like he is shattering every bone in her arm. He says things she cannot understand through her screams and lets go. She falls back onto the bodies, and they give underneath her. They are soft and sweet-smelling with rot, and she feels bone and flesh cave underneath her until she is buried in this mass of sweet, rotten decay. Lavellan feels herself burning, and she is afraid. She looks up into the sky, and there are no stars to guide her. Around her, there are no hands to help her. She is alone. Lavellan screams, "Halani! Halani! I am not dead! I am not dead! Not yet! I will not die here!" Her arms feel shattered, and the heat of decay makes her flesh feel like it has melted away too. But she is afraid. She is afraid to die here in this nameless, amorphous pit of memories. She has no anchor, and she is alone. But she will not die here. Not like this. She pushes herself up and refuses to give in when she sinks into the bodies like they are quicksand. Lavellan screams, and she calls fire to her hands, because if she will burn, she will do it herself. "You fixed it yourself," Cole says, and her eyes fly open. The early light of morning shadows Cole's face, and she can smell the cool air of the hinterlands, a unique smell from magic and cold and grass. She can hear Blackwall and Dorian idly bickering over breakfast. Cole sits back as she sits up. I was worried, but you fixed it yourself. You took control, and you were afraid, but you were also angry. And then you got up, and I was still worried, but I was more worried for whoever was on the other side. Llewellyn runs her hands through sweat-damp hair and gives him a tired smile. I would be, too. You're never that angry, or that scared, Cole says, handing her a damp cloth. Not when you're awake. If you were, I don't think you'd need any of us. Then it's a good thing I'm not, isn't it?